Good morning. First of all, there are four brethren that ask that I deliver their love to you. One is my mother, one Sister Mary Butler Longest, one is Sister Sarah Easton, and one is Brother Dudley Chastain. You have a handout which you can ignore till I get around to it. It'll make more sense when we're talking about it. And I would request to the brethren who tape this that they put an outline with the tape, because without the outline, this talk probably won't make any sense at all. I realize it's a peculiar title. You choose the title. But I really struggled with a title for this one. I rarely have that problem. I want to talk about the simplicity of chronology. And you know, there are books on the market. You've heard of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Successful Gardening. Well, I thought maybe if we called it The Complete Idiot's Guide to Successful Chronology, that doesn't sound too good. But that's the concept. It's the concept. I don't think this subject has to be intimidating. I don't really think it has to be difficult. You know, there's DOS for Dummies. We could have Chronology for Dummies. Actually, the titles I considered, In More Simple Times. What time is it? Once upon a time. It's about time. How time flies. Time, times, and more times. Or chronologic. Or everything you've always wanted to know about chronology but were afraid to ask. Okay. You may think, oh no, not another talk on chronology. But hopefully by the time we're done, you won't find it that intimidating. There are, in the history of the Bible student movement, constantly challenges that come up to nearly everything we believe, and therefore are good. As far as God's concerned, they aren't for us to sit around and worry about, or even sit around and argue about. I think in the apostles' words, it's so that those that are approved might be made manifest. Now, that doesn't mean made manifest to us. It means made manifest to God. And how it's going to be made manifest to God is how our deportment is handled when challenges come up to things that we understand. It's for character development. It's not for chronological challenge. It's for character development. Well, anyway, if you aren't aware of it, fine. If you are aware of it, fine too. But at least at the moment, there seems to be at least one prominent challenge to chronology. It's probably more, but I hear one being discussed. And I think it's important to realize that some brethren need to examine outside historic testimony. Some brethren need to ask more questions than other brethren need to ask. I don't think it's our place to question their needs. If they need to do this, they need to do it. All of us have certain needs, and some simply need to look beyond what is handed to them, and that's fine for the establishment, for the settling ultimately of their faith. These needs exist. Don't tell somebody they can't or shouldn't do it. Never question their needs nor their motives. People's intellectual needs must be honored. However, I will put this out in front of you, and you already know it. Intellect does not make something correct. You can be Christian Zano, who had a third grade education, or you can have a PhD. Whether you happen to have the third grade education or the PhD, which somebody said means piled high and deep. The fact is The Lord has given us some things to understand. And quite frankly, the understanding will be there for the third grader or for the PhD. It doesn't make any difference because intellect is not a factor. Oh, it's a factor in maybe how well you can present something or dissect something, but it's certainly not a factor in what's true and what is not true. I have found in the history of the truth movement that whenever what seemed to be a rather significant challenge arose to any doctrine, the answers always came. They didn't usually come at the moment you wanted them to come, but they always come. And I think in this case they will also. I'm not going to examine alternative chronologies with you. That's not my purpose this morning. But I know the answer to every question that's being asked is there, because it always has been. I'm going to stress simplicity, because I really believe simplicity to be a part of the doctrine of Christ. Paul warned against taking away from the simplicity of Christ. I really do not believe that chronological clarity is going to come when Laodicea is nearly complete. I think we all realize that one of the major foundations of the Laodicean church is chronology. It is most unlikely that Laodicea is going to start with a fuzzy chronology and end up with a polished one, because one of the bases of the seventh period of the church is chronology. It seems illogical that a true chronology would wait so long. Now, could it? Sure it could. Dogmatism doesn't help. You just can't say, well, no, that's impossible. But is it likely? No, I don't think so. I don't believe, and again, I'm stressing simplicity here, I don't believe that God would make it necessary for the brethren to be or rely on Assyriologists, Egyptologists, paleontologists. I don't believe that the great truths of the Bible are reliant on reading cuneiform hieroglyphics and dead languages. You know, it is interesting. As old as the Bible is, and it's old, it is written in two living languages. Languages that's still alive, Hebrew and Greek. You don't have to go and read alphabets that are long since dead. You don't have to go and worry about languages that no one speaks anymore. The Bible, as old as it is in the two oldest surviving languages in the world. I don't believe God will leave his saints to rely significantly on the esoteric scholarship of a few specialists. I'll explain all this in a few minutes, but this is just kind of all prologue. I believe the Bible is ultimately simple. I have found, in my experience, that complex solutions or complex interpretations are almost always wrong. I'm one of those people that used to be deathly afraid of approaching the book of Revelation because I thought it was complex and impossible. Well, over the time as it passed, the Lord allowed me to look into it. And I think the reason I've come to love that book is I have realized its simplicity and God's simplicity in how he put it together. And that's just one of those many confirmations about simplicity. The truth, oh, we do have to dig. Sure, we have to dig. But ultimately, it is so simple that third grade or PhD makes no difference. The simplicity of Christ is always there. I don't know if you've ever thought about it in these terms, but the Bible judges history. History does not judge the Bible. If you are a student of the Scriptures, you can tell which historian is right. I know that sounds so foolish to the world. Listen to the words of the apostle in 1 Corinthians 2:15. But he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no man. That's a wonderful verse. I don't know whether you've ever had that experience, but we are experts in things in which we are nearly ignorant. I have been in the presence of experts in all kinds of fields. I didn't know anything about their fields. And they would put something out and I would say, no, that's wrong. How ridiculous. I'm an ignoramus in their field. But as the Apostle Paul said, he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised of no one. And you know, these experts are sitting here talking with two viewpoints, and I say, he's right. And they look at me like, how is this possible? This man knows nothing about what we're talking about. But we do. He who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no man. I saw a PBS program once, public broadcasting system, NOVA or something like that. Had Dr. Leakey on there. You remember the great Dr. Leakey? Unfortunate name, isn't it? Well, he was sitting around, I think it was in an Arizona desert. They were around a campfire. And I don't remember the other people's name. You know, there was Dr. Jones and Dr. Smith and Dr. Johnson with them. And they were passing this bone around. And Dr. Smith says, oh, it's 100,000 years old. And Dr. Jones says, oh, no, we're more than like a half a million here. And Dr. Johnson said, no, 5 million. Leakey picks it up, says 20 million. They say, oh, yes, yes, yes. Because Leakey's the expert. And not one of them knew what he was talking about. Science here was sitting around guessing and admiring themselves for it. Unfortunate. I hate to see that. I felt really sorry for those men being put on a public broadcasting system, and the whole world showed this horrid contradiction by millions of years in their scholarly appraisals of this bone they were passing around. I'm not making fun of these people. I'm simply telling you what you already know. That science is sometimes sophistry. I work with a lot of people with PhDs. The resident agnostic historian came bouncing into me one day and said, I've got you. This is probably 20 years ago. They've created life in a test tube. I said, you just proved my point. He looks at me like I'm insane. I said, just think of the verb you used and the noun you used. They created. I said, they didn't have a billion test tubes laying around and one morning they walk in and say, oh, look, life happened in one of them. No. I said, what you have proven is that you must take intelligence, superimpose it on elements in such a way that you can make something happen. I said, you're proving creation, not evolution. He walked away dejected, which did not happen often with this man. Experts are frequently sophists. And I hate to say this, but I think the current chronology is based on the sophistry of experts. The current challenge to chronology. As one very respected historian said, history is lies agreed upon. But, again, if we are Bible students, if we are students of Scripture, we will find God's answers in those things that we need to know. Let us look together at the basic chronology. I believe it is elegantly simple. This is not Brother Russell's chronology. This is the Bible's chronology. I have never believed anything because Brother Russell said it. I imagine some of you have. But those who do couldn't be too far off the beacon, could they? I mean, after all, he is the Laodicean messenger in the seventh trumpet. That should count for something. But I'm not pushing Brother Russell here. This is not Brother Russell's chronology. Matter of fact, as he said, he got it from a man in England named Bowen. Who cares who it came from? It's biblical, and that's the point. Now, let's get the concept of figuring out Bible chronology. It's very simple. You see, the problem with the Bible is it doesn't put dates in it, does it? Not at all. It doesn't say Adam was created in 4128 B.C. Wouldn't that be helpful? Well, it just doesn't do that. It gives us periods of time. We have to add them up. Well, that's fine. You can do that. I don't think there's anybody in this room that can't add. And if you can't, you can get a calculator and it'll do it for you. What, $2.50 now, I think, in the local drugstore. It's all we need. I'm serious. I'm talking about the simplicity of the Bible. It's all we need. However, we need a reliable date in history as a guidepost. Some place where we can say, hey, everybody agrees this date's right. And look, it corresponds to this thing in the Bible. Once you find that one date, one, that's all you need, that corresponds clearly to something in the Bible, then you can put a date on everything in the Bible. That's how easy it is. And when Brother Russell presented in chapter 2 of volume 2 the chronology, that was his approach. He said, strange. The Bible takes you so carefully, year by year, right up to here, and then it stops. Well, why does it stop? Well, Brother Russell explained. It stops because it found the date where everybody can agree in the secular world that here's the date we all know is true. So God stops putting all that stuff in there, or the Bible would be a little bit wide to carry around. That's the concept. Now, do you think it's an accident that the Bible stopped at exactly that point? It's not likely, is it? If God's going to stop keeping a record of the flow of time, is it likely that he will pick a date that you can't confirm? He might as well have given you nothing because you couldn't confirm it. All right, I think we can use our handouts now. There are two sides. Now let's take the seven step side first. This, by the way, is part of a new Albany Ecclesia publication. Should be ready in about 2 weeks. Close to 50 pages of chronology charts, so you can visualize just about anything. If you're interested, see Sister Martha Moody, but not all at once. It'll probably be somewhere between $2.50 and $3. Okay, who told you to fear chronology? That's all. It's right here. Once you know this, everything else you have to figure out about chronology is done, or is easy to do based on what's here. That one date that we have from the famous historian Ptolemy, that everybody says, yeah, that's right, it's right, it's correct, that's 536 B.C., the first year of Cyrus over Jerusalem. It's a historically confirmed date. It's there. You see that at the right side, Edict of Cyrus, 536 B.C. That means all we have to do is measure backward from there in those time periods that the Bible gives us. There's seven steps preceding it, and we go all the way back to the creation of Father Adam. No questions whatsoever. Now, you'll see what happens here at the bottom, scriptures for substantiation. In most cases there, as I said, all you need is a calculator. Where it says 1656 years from the creation of Adam to the flood, and it gives all those Genesis texts, punch it in, hit the equal sign, you're going to get 1656. Is that confusing? Is that difficult? Is that challenging? Is that fearful? Whoever made you afraid of chronology? It's there. That's simple, isn't it? 1656 years from Adam to the flood. Second step. From the flood to the Abrahamic covenant. The texts are at the bottom. You have to do a little more thinking on those than just calculator. The calculator will work, but you have to think while you're pushing some of the buttons in. Then 430 years from the covenant with Abraham until the Exodus. Look at that. Only two texts. That's pretty easy, isn't it? Then the wilderness and the division of the land. Well, you know how many texts talk about 40 years in the wilderness. So the only part you have to show is the extra 6 years there for the division of the land. Again, you have to think about a couple of those texts that are shown down there below. But when you think about them, you come up with the answer. So our total there in step number four is 46 years. Then the 450 years of Judges. Look how many texts you need to prove that. Oh, I know it's come under challenge. I'll say something about that in a minute or two here. But there we have an apostolic statement. 450 years. How easy can you get? And again, I am stressing, brethren, I know that this is subject to challenges, but I think those challenges are sophistry. I really do. Here we have a simple apostolic statement, which the New American Standard, by the way, happens to ruin miserably. We'll look at that. Okay, 513 years of kings. Well, you know there's kings of Judah and there's kings of Israel. And where's the promise go? It goes through Judah. So all you got to do is take your calculator and add up the kings of Judah there, and you've got it. Don't worry about the kings of Israel. They're rebels. Think the Lord's interested in their chronology? They're rebels. The promise was through Judah. Desolation of the land. There's four texts there. You read it. You see if it isn't as clear as possible that it dates from the time poor old Zedekiah had to take off his crown until the time that Cyrus says, go back. That's it. Are you still afraid of chronology? There isn't any more. Oh, there's lots of detail, but that's the big picture. Everybody in this room can do it, and you can do it with those few little scriptures at the bottom and with a calculator. You know the dates of all the events in the Bible, and you get it on one page. All right, now, let's turn it over. I'm going to talk about details now. And now if you're afraid of chronology, go ahead and be fearful. Because I'm going to talk about some detail. And you can ignore the whole rest of the talk if you like, because you already got the part that's important. I just want to talk about some corroborative things here. And if you've studied chronology and have certain working familiarity with it, some of these things might get you nice and excited. I think some of them are very nice. You know, we have a great advantage of living at a time when events have proven accuracy. When Brother Russell was here, and he said 1914, no event had proven any accuracy. But we're past that, and we're looking back, and it's all there for our eyes to see. You don't even need faith anymore on some of these things. The events have proven the accuracy. You remember the prophecy of the 70 weeks in Daniel? That was part of that 2300-day prophecy. You remember what the angel told Daniel? He said, I'm going to cut off 70 weeks here because when they happen, it'll prove The bigger one, the 2300 day one. It's going to establish the prophet. It's going to prove the prophecy just by proving a little bit of it by having it fulfilled. And so the angel likes this idea. He says, once you see something fulfilled, you can rely on it. All the rest, you can build upon that fact that things are fulfilled. All right, let's look at the top. Two basic historical time locks on the chronology. I am so impressed with these. With these two very little things at the top of the page, God has said, after you have struggled with your calculator or your pencil, and you've added up all these things, and you're saying, did I get it right? He said, I'm going to show you you got it right. Because I'm going to show you by history that what you did works. This first thing here, the Jewish double, which is mentioned a number of places. I just put the Zechariah text down there. You see those two little arches. They're in the middle there at AD 33. How do we know that? Well, this does not take great scholarship. You read Zechariah 9, and it says, he's riding in on an ass and the colt the foal of an ass. Now, do you know when that was? Of course you know when that was, just before he was crucified. You've got the date, don't you? This is not scholarship. This is pretty basic stuff. I suspect out in the denominations they can tell you when that happened. 33 A.D. And it's right at that point that Zechariah says, I will render to you double. So this whole prophecy of the double has its center here. Now, I know Brother Malley on the screen here had an alternate double to show a certain point. I know brethren have all kinds of alternate doubles, but the prophet doesn't. I mean, it's nice to show these alternate doubles for nice little doodads, enlightenments, etc., etc., etc. But there's only one prophetic double. You destroy it, you've just thrown out Zechariah. You throw out Zechariah, who do you throw out? God! Because Zechariah was speaking the words of God. There is one double and one double only. Its center is 33 A.D. Now, when you calculate the double, you know, you go back to the death of Jacob. And then from there to 33 was 1845 years. So you add that on, you come to 1878 as the end of the second half of the double. Well, for a while, that's just prophecy, isn't it? But after 1878, it's not prophecy anymore. It's corroborated because the Jews set up their first commune in Israel. Now it's not prophecy anymore. It's done. Let me do two things with you concerning this. Number one, let me read the words of David Ben-Gurion. 1878, as the end of the Jewish double, is not a Bible student thing. It's a Jewish thing. Let me read David Ben-Gurion's words on the 10th anniversary of Israel's statehood. So in 1958, he spoke these words. Quote, the state did not come into existence on that great day of May 14th, 1948. Can you imagine his audience? What? The state did not come into existence on that great day of May 14, 1948, nor was it the 650,000 Jews who lived in the country on that day who established it. Now, if you're listening to Ben-Gurion at this point, you're saying, well, tell me more. When was Israel established if not 1948? He continues. Pioneering activities of three generations preceded the Declaration of Independence beginning in 1878, when the first Hebrew settlement in the country, Petah Tikva, was founded. See, it's a Jewish thing. They know when they started. Oh, we do. Okay, that's the first of two things that I said I'd like to tell you about the double. And the second one is this, because I'm not talking about the double, I'm talking about the chronology. The double is a time lock on chronology. Do you realize if you change 1 year in that double, It's an invalid prophecy. It doesn't work. Look where that first loop goes backwards from 33. Boom. 1813 BC, death of Jacob. Do you know that if you got the death of Jacob wrong, double wouldn't work? So the double's saying, oh, you got Jacob's death date correct when you calculated with your calculator. You got it right. Not only that, you must have everything from Jacob's death. Now, you know, Jacob died. Somewhere in here, after the Abrahamic covenant. So that means it's going to confirm the time of the Exodus. It's going to confirm the wilderness and division of the lands. It's going to confirm 450 years of judges. It's going to confirm 513 years of kings. It's going to confirm 70 years of desolation of the land. Because if any one of those periods is moved so much as 1 year, the double's wrong. Do you see what a wonderful prophecy that is? A historical time lock on the chronology. By 1878, establishment of Jews in the Holy Land, God said, your chronology is correct, at least back to the death of Jacob. You cannot have made a mistake. Don't fiddle with it. It's a wonderful, wonderful prophecy. Not only because of its other meanings to us, but it says, you're right. You can't be wrong. Gentile times. Second time lock on the chronology. You know, Brother Russell loved this prophecy, and its fulfillment came just before he died. So he always looked forward to it. We look back on it. I don't think anybody in here is unaware that if you walk into a bookstore history section, you're going to find 10, 15, 30 books of 1914 in the title. The whole world knows about 1914. The brethren preached it up till 1914, and the world recorded it since then. Now, sometimes the brethren seem to forget about it, and the world has to remind us that we were right. But the fact is, 1914 is such an established date in history as to be indisputable. Now, the fact that it happened, based on Brother Russell's projection, it could not have happened if his projection were wrong. His projection, of course, said it has to be from the time that the Gentile foot gets plunked on Jerusalem. Zedekiah takes off his crown, the Gentile puts its foot on Jerusalem, and it's going to stay there until Jesus says, get that foot off my city. He did that in 1914. Jesus said, get your big foot off. That's the meaning of the Gentile times prophecy. Now, the fact that it happened proved Brother Russell was right. It also proves that the date where you started was right, because it couldn't have happened if the starting date was wrong. 606 B.C., huh? That's the beginning of this 70-year desolation of the land. Now, it couldn't have happened unless the starting date were correct. Oh, it's a big date. It's a big date. It's actually 607 in the fall. The Jewish temple was destroyed. Big item in the lives of the Jews. So 2,520 years later, God comes along and says, I'm going to destroy your temple. And it happened. Not in 1915, which is the prophetic date, but fall of 1914, which is where it started. On top of that, of course, God picked this wonderful number that's evenly divisible by all digits and by all the sums of those digits, and it's a marvelous number. So here's another time lock on chronology, you see. The world war could not have broken out as predicted unless Zedekiah took his crown off in 606 B.C. It's that easy. It really is. By the way, just an aside here. The Gentile times prophecy is not about Gentiles. You know, we have to adjust all kinds of things in Brother Russell's writings concerning the 1914 date, because he expected everything to be finished by then. And we all make different adjustments. But there are some things that we really ought to know. Brethren say, well, Gentile times couldn't be over. Image couldn't be smitten. Because look, the Gentiles are still there. This prophecy, when you read it in Luke, doesn't say the Gentiles are going to disappear. Read what Jesus said. He said their big foot's going to be on Jerusalem until the Gentile times have ended. The Gentile times is a prophecy of how long the Gentiles would rule Jerusalem. The prophecy's about Jerusalem, not about Gentiles. That's why the dethroning of Zedekiah is so terribly important. That's why the destruction of the temple is so very important. The prophecy is about Jerusalem, not about Gentiles. It simply uses the word to say, poor Jerusalem, you're going to have a foot on you for 2,520 years. But there again, that prophecy locks in all the dates from 606 to 1914. All right, Old Testament's confirmation of Acts 13:20, that's 450-year period of the judges. If you have a King James, it's not bad there at all. The Apostle Paul simply tells you that the period of the judges is 450 years. I believe him. If I can't believe an apostle, I got a problem. But the period of judges is one of those things that people who like to fiddle with the chronology have to adjust. And it's very convenient to adjust, because if you try to figure it out in the Old Testament, at least theoretically, you can do almost anything you want to. And you can chop off this many years here and chop off this many. You know, it's like an accordion. But it's not. The apostle said it's 450 years long. What I have for you here, this, by the way, is also a little excerpt from one of the charts in the New Albany book. I'm getting a lot of commercials in here. The chronology chart. Old Testament proof of Paul's total. Now, you can figure this one out again with an adding machine if you want to do it. The fact is, you can demonstrate that the period of Judges is 450 years long. And the texts are there to do it. And you'll notice the total at the bottom is 450. And it works. Oh, sure, you can ask questions about it, but it works. And the fact that it works simply confirms what Paul says in Acts. The period of the judges is 450 years long. And you know, God always loves to give us little pats on the back and says, yes, yes, you're doing it nicely. And this happens, you'll notice there at the top of this little chart, there's a subtotal of 301. When I was doing this, I was adding up, and I thought, am I doing this right? Am I leaving something out? Have I added something too many times? You know, your heart's pounding. You're dealing with the Lord's Word. Am I doing it wrong? Am I doing it wrong? And right at this one point, Jephthah stands up, and he says, it was 300 years ago that this started, and now we're in the 301st year. And you look at your paper with your adding machine, and it says 301. You think, I did it right. So the Lord put Jephthah in there to pat you on the back and said, yes, you're doing it right. However, 300 is only two-thirds of the way through 450, isn't it? And so you got to say, well, why didn't he do it at the end and just make it easy and say, you did it right, the total is 450. Well, the fact is, he did, by the Apostle Paul. He didn't do it back in the Old Testament, because he didn't want the Jews to know it. However, Paul was a Jew, and he knew it, didn't he? He didn't have an adding machine, but he did have a pencil. And he knew it was 450 years, and he confirms our suspicions when we add it up and get the total there. So when somebody tells you the period of the judges is flexible like an accordion, just look at them. First Kings 6:1. Brother also points out that this is an error. With as much as you've just learned and already know, you can prove it's an error. We don't have to take Brother Russell's word for it or anybody else's. If we are Bible students, and we've just done all that stuff on the other side of the page, and we believe the Apostle Paul, we can show this is wrong. Look at 1 Kings 6:1. Now it came about, your translation and mine says, in the 480th year after the sons of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, etc., etc., etc. It should say 500 years. How do you know that? Well, look at your little chart there in the middle of the page. I'm going to read from right to left. This is the fourth year of Solomon's reign, right? So I put a 4 there on the right side, that incomplete circle. We know that David reigned 40 years before him, so there's 40. We know that Saul reigned 40 years also. By the way, you need the New Testament to prove that too. Now, the 450-year period of the Judges that Paul told you about, and which above you can prove by the Old Testament if you care to, is there. And the 46 years in the wilderness in the land division is right at the beginning of the left side of that chart. If you add 46, 450, 40, 40, and 4, what do you get? 580. So 1 Kings 6:1's wrong. Do you have to be afraid of this chronology? No. You can see it's wrong. Somebody goofed. It's a mistake. If you're a Bible student, you appraise all things and are appraised of no man. You can tell this is wrong. Some people think the period of Judges was 350 years long. You tell me where I'm going to erase 100 years out of that. Okay. Let's go to Acts 13, where the apostle tells us about the period of Judges. Here I'm being critical of the translation that I use all the time. Let's see. Tim, may I borrow your King James? One thing about the New American Standard, it's wonderful except where it has to be. Let me read the King James first. Acts 13, 16 to 20. Then Paul stood up and beckoning with his hand said, Men of Israel, and ye that fear God, give audience. It doesn't sound like a casual little remark here, does it? The God of this people of Israel chose our fathers and exalted the people when they dwelt as strangers in the land of Egypt, and with a high arm brought he them out of it. And about the time of 40 years suffered he their manners in the wilderness. Actually, he means their lack of manners. And when he had destroyed 7 nations in the land of Canaan, he divided their land to them by lot. And after that he gave unto them judges about the space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet. Clear. It's really very clear. King James. Now, I don't know what the motive behind translators is sometimes, but listen to this. Horrid excuse for a translation. Same passage, New American Standard. And Paul stood up, and motioning with his hand, he said, Men of Israel, and you here who fear God, listen. The God of this people Israel chose our fathers and made the people great during their stay in the land of Egypt. And with an uplifted arm, he led them out from it. And for a period of about 40 years, he put up with them in the wilderness. So far, it's okay. And when he had destroyed 7 nations in the land of Canaan, he distributed their land as an inheritance, all of which took about 450 years. Ooh! We already saw that that's impossible. It's on the other side of our handout, isn't it? And after these things, he gave them judges. So we got 450 years, and then judges pinned on the end of it. Really? These were not students of Scripture who translated this. The devil had his hand in it. And of course, it's based on the translation error of Exodus 12:40, which I suppose we'll look at also. Now the time that the sons of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. I think your King James isn't much better on that one, is it? No. Well, it's not true. It's impossible. The proofs we have on the other side show that that's impossible. But probably whoever translated the New American Standard in Acts 13 had Exodus 12 in mind when he did it. Now, just to show why this doesn't work. Number one, first, I think the Apostle Paul could add, don't you? I mean, he did come up with 450 years for judges. At least in the King James he did. But look, if we take Exodus 430 years, just as it says, and we add the 40 years for wandering in the wilderness. Paul was aware of both of those. You think he could add 430 and 40 and come up with 450? Is this possible? This is an apostle, an inspired apostle speaking, who said, sit down, I'm going to tell you something about God. This is not a casual little discourse he's giving in Acts 13. This is an apostolic pronouncement. And he says 430 plus 40 is 450. No. No. Secondly, Israel was in Egypt 215 years, exactly half of what Exodus says, which you can prove for yourself when you want to. Was in the wilderness 40, was dividing the land for 6, so they were not in Egypt for 430 years. How do we prove it? Okay, Jacob's birth, 1960 B.C. The Exodus, 1615 B.C. 345 is the number of years from Jacob's birth to the Exodus. But Jacob didn't go into Egypt at his birth, did he? He grew up, had a family of 12 children. His second youngest son, Joseph, was at Pharaoh's right hand, and he finally and his family ended up in Egypt. So there's no way that they were in Egypt 430 years. It's impossible for Egypt, Israel to have been in Egypt for even 345 years, let alone 430. It simply doesn't work. And thirdly, it is clear from the other side of this page that it's 430 years from the Abrahamic covenant to the Exodus, making it absurd to the extreme to claim 430 years in Egypt. Okay, I'm done. I have pontificated for an hour or so. Let me recapitulate. I may have sounded a bit vehement now and then. I am not critical of brethren seeking proofs, even if they have to, in the secular world. I respect most of the brethren who do it very highly. I just happen to think they're wrong. I happen to think that chronology is ultimately simple. I honestly believe that all of us in this room can, with a great deal of security of mind, prove in short order what the first side of this page says. And it becomes the basis for everything else you do in chronology. God doesn't want you to read broken hieroglyphic tablets that have holes in them and try to figure out what on earth it is they're saying about the chronology, written by a bunch of Babylonians who hated the Israelis. It doesn't work. Again, I'm sounding rather critical. But I think it's a sophistry. And just don't get upset by it all. Recently in Louisville, there was a rather unfortunate play. I won't even go into its subject matter. But I thought, you know, if they didn't put on television, you know, the play got the ire of the populace up, and they were out with picket signs in front of the theater and everything. Don't see this play because it's this, that, and the other. If they hadn't even bothered mentioning it on TV, the whole thing would have blown over. Very few people would have seen it. But with the TV mention and all the placards, everybody went and saw it. Well, don't do that with challenges to the truth. Just talk about the truth. If there's a challenge, hush it up. Don't broadcast it. May the Lord add his blessing.
Thank you, Brother David. We will conclude with 296, the last two verses. And we'll, after Brother David's prayer, we would like for you to just sit for a moment or two here so I have some announcements. 296, the last two.
Gracious, holy, beloved Father, hallowed be thy name. We are grateful that you have called us and that you deal with us, that you know our fleshly imperfections and forgive us for them. We are grateful for the simplicity which is in Christ, even in the complex matters of thy word, that we may by thy word indeed lay down a foundation for our faith that we can all rely on, trust in, stand upon with firmness. Where we err, we ask thy help in all things. We ask that our attitudes and our character likeness will be like that of our Lord, and that whatever things we face in our Christian life, whether they be doctrinal, prophetic, personal, we will do it with the grace that comes from thy Spirit and use the experience for being more like thee, and not to be overly critical, not to be anxious. For we pray for a place in thy kingdom that will honor thee and bless us. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.